Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. The political season is now in full swing post Labor Day weekend, with issue two, of course, the anti-Senate Bill 5 ballot issue remaining in the starring role. But Ohio lost two congressional seats due to slow population growth over the last decade and a Republican-drawn congressional map that gives the GOP a good chance to win 12 of the 16 new districts. Passed the Ohio House last week. It's moved on to the Senate. It passed the House with support from three black Cleveland area Democrats, too. So joining us to talk about that and more is Joe Engels, correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
Also, Bill Hershey, correspondent for the Dayton Daily News Columbus Bureau. Bill, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And by phone from Washington, Jack Torrey, Washington Bureau Chief for the Columbus Dispatch. Jack, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
If you have a question or comment, we're going to talk about redistricting first, so give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page, post your question or comment there, or you can tweet me, at @AnnFisherWOSU. So, as I mentioned earlier, the Republican-drawn congressional map gives the GOP a good chance to win 12 of the 16 new districts. It passed the House last week with support from three black Cleveland area Democrats. What gives, Bill Hershey, three Democrats supporting a Republican-drawn plan that clearly favors Republicans?
It favors Republicans overall, but it continues to create a majority black district. The majority black district would go from Cleveland to Akron now. It would be both Cuyahoga and Summit counties. And it also creates a black influence district, or a district in which a minority candidate could have an influence on the outcome. In the black majority district, 52% of the voters would be African American, and in the third district in Franklin County in Columbus, nearly 29%. And that is the reason that these Democrats said they supported it. One of them said that it really did sort of trash Democrats overall, but you know, and everything in politics is local, and I guess this is an example of that.
Were you surprised, Jack, that even though it favors a couple of black districts, that they supported it as Democrats?
No, I'm not surprised at all, and I agree with what Bill just said on that, that all politics is local. Look, the point of this map was to preserve as many Republican seats as possible, which meant that they had to funnel some votes over for Pat Tiberi in the 12th district and Steve Stivers in the 15th district. And as a result, by doing that, they created a brand new Democratic seat in Columbus, which of course allows Democrats to pick up Columbus and hold Cleveland. And Bill is correct on that. If 29% of the voters in the new third district are African American, an African American candidate could win a crowded primary there.
Bill?
One of the interesting things about this, and the Republicans and Democrats will tell you, what you do in one district ripples across all 16 districts. For example, it created a black majority district. It created a black influence district in Columbus. But in Dayton, in Montgomery County, black neighborhoods were split up between House Speaker John Boehner's district, which would be the 8th, and this newly created 10th district, which pits Republican Mike Turner, an incumbent from Centerville outside of Dayton, against Republican Steve Austria from Beaver Creek. So you could say that black voter strength was diluted in Montgomery County, but you didn't hear much about that because that's just one county. So there's lots to this plan.
Joe Engels, the Ohio Democratic Party Chairman Chris Redfern, said last week that they are prepared to use, quote, every tool, every constitutional resource at our disposal to fight this unfair anti-voter congressional map. So he said that includes legal challenges and an attempt to overturn the maps with a referendum on the 2012 ballot. What do you make of that? What are the odds of success even to get it on the ballot?
Well, you know, they've got a captive audience for the next couple of months, the Democrats do, because with Senate Bill 5, there's a lot of opposition from Democrats and even some Republicans on that. There are a lot of events, anti-Senate Bill 5 events throughout the state, and there would be an opportunity for them to take petitions out and circulate them. That being said, Chairman Redfern also indicated that it's expensive to wage a referendum and that doing so would tie it up for a long period of time. And there are some unknowns out there as to if it was tied up for a long period of time, courts can step in, you know, all kinds of things can happen. And he said that his hope would be that the other side would come together and they could talk and they could, you know, basically fix what he sees as the problems in this. It sounded somewhat as a threat, the way he said it, because it didn't sound like he was fully engaged. He said he was, but then on the other hand, he says, well, but I really don't want to do it. So it sounded more like a threat to try to get the Republicans to the table. But he said he's prepared to back up that threat. So,
aren't there usually court challenges to the plans anyway?
Yes. Yes, but the problem is the courts, federal courts, have always been a little reluctant, particularly at the U.S. Supreme Court level, to get involved with what they consider partisan politics. Look, since the beginning of time, if the party in power has a chance to control drawing up the districts, they're going to draw the districts to their advantage, and they're going to create some very creative maps, which is what they did here. I mean, I still can't figure out Steve Stivers' this map. It looks like an upside-down U or S or something of that nature.
Bullwinkle's horns, right?
Yes. Yes, and for those of us old enough to remember Rocky and Bullwinkle, we know what you're talking about. The other thing, the courts have usually gotten involved if there's a violation of the Voting Rights Act. Well, by creating a majority-minority district and a minority-influence district, that's going to be a very tough argument to make. My guess is the courts, unless they forum shop and get the right federal judge, the courts are not going to be wanting to get involved in this.
Bill?
Jack is correct. This is the way things have been done. But I think about districts that I used to think were odd-shaped back in the, pre-electric ages when I was covering Congress like Jack is now. A Democrat named Ed Feehan had a district that was shaped like a barbell. It was connected from the east and the west only by the Ohio Turnpike. And I said, God, that's awful. But then, as Jack said, I call it the backwards horseshoe, that district with Stivers in it. And that's not the only one. The one that really, I think, attracts attention is the one that goes from Toledo to Cleveland.
It's like you have to be a beachcomber.
Beachcomber.
To be represented.
We could call it the beachcomber district. It puts Marcy Kaptur and Dennis Kucinich in the same district. And I'm not sure how it's connected. The Dispatch reported that it's connected by a bridge in Sandusky Bay. Is that correct, Jack? That
I
makes
think
it
that's
contiguous.
What it is, yeah.
And that's pretty, that seems absurd. But this is politics first and last. And also, the U.S. Constitution is not as prescriptive when it comes to creating congressional districts as the Ohio Constitution is when it comes to creating state legislative districts. The Ohio Constitution says there's a premium on keeping counties, cities, townships, and villages together. The only thing the U.S. Constitution says is the districts must be equal in population, and these districts are.
Former. To give you an idea of how long this goes back, it goes the name gerrymandering, and I think Bill could probably address this because he did cover the Constitutional Convention in 1789. I think Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts is the man who is given the name for this. So this has gone on for 200-odd years, and the courts have tended to sort of say, well, we think it's ugly, we think it's messy, but this is politics.
Former Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner says Democrats blew their chance last year to make the redistricting process bipartisan when they turned down a redistricting plan by then State Senator John Husted. Let's listen.
There were a lot of discussions among the people politically involved that would have allowed this to pass, and it didn't happen because there were those who had enough sway who believed that the Democrats were going to control the apportionment board and that they were going to get their due.
Of course, some Democrats accuse Jennifer Bruner of helping give Republicans that control by deciding to run for in the Senate primary against Lee Fisher. But is that just sour grapes or sniping? Or does Jennifer Bruner make a good point?
She makes a point and probably a good point, but we have to, again, separate the apportionment board from control of the Ohio House and Senate.
Right.
The Democrats could still control the apportionment board And if they control, if the Republicans controlled the House and the Senate and there was a Democratic governor, the Republicans would still control congressional redistricting, right, 2-1. And I think that there's probably enough guilt to go around, if guilt's the right word. Democrats balked at Husted's plan. His plan would have affected both congressional and legislative redistricting. The only plan that actually emerged in the Democratic-controlled House would have been only on legislative redistricting. And now House Speaker Bill Batchelder wasn't really enthusiastic about that. It takes, I think, a supermajority to get something on the ballot, and he didn't want to provide Republican votes for it. And I don't think the Senate Democrats in the Ohio Senate were too enthusiastic. So I think we can spread around the responsibility for why something positive didn't happen.
My guests are Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, also Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News, and Jack Torrey from the Columbus Dispatch. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And John in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hi.
This is very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's by design. But I just wanted to ask the guest if they know of a Supreme Court precedent within the last 10 years that really dealt with those irregularly shaped districts, that were designed, I think, in Georgia or in the South somewhere. And I was just wondering, is there anything that we can look and see the legal footing that these proponents of this redistricting are on?
You know, Bob in Worthington emailed me this morning, and he asked kind of the same question. Isn't there a way a successful challenge in some court of law could be made that would be upheld all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court against the present very political way that redistricting is now done in most states? Maybe the basis of such a case could be that this long-existing gerrymandering is against some aspect of the U.S. Constitution, such as equal treatment under the law, or a U.S. Supreme Court case that has already interpreted the Constitution, such as the one-person, one-vote case. Anyone want to take a stab?
Well, if I remember correctly, the map and Bill can help me on this one, the map that Jim Tilling, the former Republican map drawer, drew up in the 90s, went up to the Supreme Court, and they approved it. I'm not aware of too many plans that have been tossed out for the very reasons that we've already discussed. The courts are very reluctant to get in here and second-guess what is a political decision. Now, I think the Ohio Republicans have pushed the envelope on this one to the point where a court might look at it and say, now, come on, let's get serious here. But the tendency has been to stay out of it. If you want to change the districts, then you have to organize at the political level.
Dan Tokaji, expert on voting in congressional districts, who's a professor at the Moritz College of Law at The Ohio State University, does think there are a couple ways that these districts could be challenged. I didn't bring my notes on my interviews with Dan here, so I'm not going to even say what he said those arguments could be. But if you got the districts in front of some court and they looked at them, as Jack said, they would at least conclude that they're pushing the envelope, which is a pretty polite way to put it.
We're going to take a break right now. If you have any questions or comments for our panel of reporters, we're talking about redistricting. We're going to continue that conversation. They're going to be voting in the Senate probably this week, and then it'll move to the governor for his signature. So we're going to have one last conversation before it's all over with. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, will Europe pull together or come apart? We'll look at stakes and consequences. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point begins this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. Showers and maybe some thunderstorms today, a high of 68 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms possible tonight as well, a low of 61. Cloudy skies for Tuesday morning and then sunshine in the afternoon, a high of 75. Clouds Tuesday night, a low of 61 degrees. It's 64 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1120.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Women's Book, a directory of local resources for women. Its 2011 book titled Confidence, Getting It, Keeping It, and Passing It On will be available at the Columbus Area Release Party September 29th. Details at thewomensbook.com.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about congressional redistricting. It goes for a vote in the Senate. It's already passed the House. It goes for a vote in the Senate probably this week. If you have a question or comment for our panel of reporters, Joe Engels, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Bill Hershey, correspondent for the Dayton Daily News Columbus Bureau, and Jack Torrey, the Washington Bureau Chief for the Columbus Dispatch, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jack, redistricting is a function of the decennial census. It's going on in every state. In Ohio, Republicans control every step of the process this time. And I was wondering if that's unusual. I was thinking back to, you know, Jim Tilling in the 90s. I think even then, Vern Reif, you know, the Democrats controlled the House. And I think that the state auditor was a Democrat at that time. I might be wrong about that. But is this complete and utter unmitigated control typical these days?
In the congressional redistricting, it is, because if you control the legislature and the governor's office, you control redistricting for Congress. The apportionment board, which is the governor's office, the auditor, and the secretary of state, if I got that right, they're
yes.
the ones who – did I get that right?
Yep.
Yes.
If they're the ones who do the state house districts.
Yeah.
Now, having said all this, there are a couple districts in here that, look, the Republicans drew the map 10 years ago, and they still got beat in the 06 and 08 elections because population shifts. Mm-hmm. If you nominate a conservative Democrat in Bill Johnson's district, I think that could be a competitive district. I think Bob Gibbs's is a little more difficult to win but the fact is, if you nominate a conservative Democrat in a Democratic year, that seat could go the other way. There is no such thing as a perfect map. Having said that, I'm kind of like with most reporters of the view that it's time to turn this over to some sort of a nonpartisan group to draw sensible districts.
I think one of the things that the Campaign for Accountable Redistricting did, which was very helpful and was objected to by Representative Huffman, the chairman of the committee, they developed a partisan index based on the 2008 presidential election and the three apportionment boards elections in 2010. And in only two districts was the index less than 55% for either party. And that was their definition for competitive. And Jack's right, if we had another landslide election like we did in 2008 or maybe 2006, that was for the Democrats, maybe they could win one of those districts. But out of these 16, only two are competitive based on that index. And that's not very many in a state that's basically a 50-50 state.
Peg in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, I think they're already Bill Hershey just talked about what I wanted. That the game changer is that now there is an alternative that the competition showed that you can do compactness and competition both together.
That consortium that had the contest?
Yes.
Peg,
yep.
Did you submit a map?
No. Okay. I don't have the computer skills, but there were over 50 maps submitted, and the winning one was done by a Republican in Illinois. So there are people all over who really want this to be done in a fair and honest way, and these were submitted to the committee, and they ignored them.
With computerization, Bill Hershey, why should this have to be a human endeavor, per se?
Well, it's not. It's a human endeavor with the computer directed to get the results that that the people directing the computer want them to be. It just gives more tools to those who want to do this. And Peg is correct. The campaign produced several maps which don't look as weird as this and provide for more competition. However, you can't take the politics out of politics. And I think one of the winning maps put U.S. House Speaker Boehner in a district that would have forced him to run in a primary. And they may have corrected that in another one. But that something like that is not going to fly. I think U.S. House Speaker Boehner probably had as much to do with creating these districts as some of the state legislators did. I'd like to ask Jack that, but that's my sense of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at who came out of this with a stronger district, Pat Tiberi and Steve Stivers are both very strong Boehner allies. And one of the goals, Tiberi had privately argued that if his district didn't change, by the next, somewhere in the next 10 years, he would lose. I'm not sure if he was correct, but he managed to make that argument. The other thing was Bill Johnson, the freshman Republican along the Ohio River in the eastern part of Ohio. Originally, the idea would the Republicans thought they would probably have to eliminate his district, but he proved to be an extremely reliable vote for Boehner. And it won him a lot of friends in the Speaker's office, which led them to do the opposite, which was to dump Steve Austria and Mike Turner in the same district. And quite frankly, neither Mr. Turner nor Mr. Austria are that popular among Ohio House Republicans in Washington.
You know, the Dispatch reported in July that the Republican Study Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, a Republican from Ohio, his open defiance of Speaker Boehner's plans may cost him his seat in the November 2012 elections. That didn't happen.
No, it didn't, because they ran into Mount Batchelder in the Ohio House. And Batchelder made it pretty clear privately that you're not getting rid of Jordan's district, which forced them to, because I think the original idea was to put Turner and Jordan in the same district. Well, Batchelder said no, and which is what I've been told, at least. Mm-hmm. So that put the other obvious thing was Turner and Austria.
Thanks, Peg, for that call. Go ahead, Bill.
I think these maps did change several times, and Jack may have seen them, but I saw a map that was the week before the final map was released, and it had more of a square-type district up there in northwest Ohio rather than the wandering Jordan district from Toledo to Clark County. Do you think this map just came together at the end, Jack?
I don't know that for a fact. I do know there were changes toward the end because they wanted to get – Jordan and his allies wanted to get a piece of Mercer County into his district. And the state senator there, and Bill, you should know who that is, I think would like to eventually run for Congress.
Keith Faber.
Yes. So I think he'd like to run for Congress. They wanted to keep part of Mercer County in that district. But the fact of the matter is, with computers today, as opposed to pens and pencils 40 years ago, you can change a map in a blink of an eye.
There were some winners. Besides, there were some Democratic winners. I suppose you could put it. Last week, former U.S. Representative Mary Jo Kilroy lost her seat to Republican Steve Stivers in 2010. But now that Republicans have redrawn the congressional map, she says she'll run again. Let's listen.
I had close races in a swing district and a winning race in a swing district. This is a very different district.
So why would Republicans create a district in Franklin County that favors Democrats? We've already talked about that, but there are those, it does create kind of a safe place for Mary Jo. She returns.
I think she probably will. This is the district that was a black influence district. And I think right now going into this campaign, Mary Jo Kilroy has the advantages. She said she's been on the ballot three times, and for somebody else to step forward, he or she would have to raise a lot of money and get a lot of exposure real quickly, and Kilroy's already, she's out there.
Do you visualize anything, Jack?
I do, accept that I would watch to see what Mayor Coleman, now Mayor Coleman is clearly not going to run for that seat, I think, but I think you might see him throw his backing behind another candidate. And if you end up with a multi-candidate primary, an African-American could emerge with the nomination there, and that would guarantee election in the fall, because that district is going to be very tough for a Republican to win.
And that would make Republicans happy, too, if they could get Democrats fighting with each other going into a presidential election. It might slow down some of the momentum that Democrats hope to build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a pretty malicious map, and there's a lot of malicious thought behind it.
LaVon, in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I thought that the goal was to have rather consolidated districts, but the map that came out reminds me of the questions raised about old city streets, and said, well, they were laid out along the cow trails of the previous era before the town was formed.
Well, that's a new description. That's a good one, too.
I think the only cows who would have laid out these districts would have been intoxicated cows who would have had something in their water, because most cows go. My father-in-law was a dairy farmer, and I realized how hard he worked. They wanted to chew the grass and whatever they ate and get to the water, not go in circles like this one district. So,
thanks, LaVon. Appreciate it. 614-292-8513. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. A separate bill was approved Thursday that would push back the 2012 primary from March to May. But the legislation can't go into effect immediately because an emergency clause failed to attract the 7 House Democratic votes needed for a two-thirds threshold. What does all this mean, Joe Ingles?
Well, initially, there was an agreement, we're told, that was made between Speaker Batchelder and the Democrats, Democratic leader Armin Budish. And the agreement was, you let us have some say in redistricting, keep us in the loop, and we'll give you the votes you need for this emergency clause. Well, when the maps came out, Representative Budish is saying, you know, we didn't get any input in this. You broke the agreement, and therefore we're not going to give you these emergency votes so that you can put this in place right away. They didn't necessarily disagree on the merits of the emergency clause itself. It was more of a way that they could get back at the Republicans for not including them in the process. But then the Republicans did an end run after the emergency clause didn't make it through. Then they took a little recess. They came back, and they basically pass something that I think it's going to be kind of messy to see it implemented, but it kind of gives some leeway as far as dates and how the candidates can file and that sort of thing.
Is that constitutional, though? Aren't those things?
It is until someone challenges it.
Okay.
And basically, this amendment that Joe mentions to the date change legislation says whenever, it doesn't matter whenever you file, you can still be on the ballot for the districts that are created.
Yeah, and you can file twice, you know, in two different districts, you know, by not knowing. So you can make a precautionary file, you know, if you're not sure which district you're going to be in.
Now, one possibility that Speaker Batchelder mentioned and that Representative Huffman mentioned is that Ohio might be so lucky as to have two primaries. One for state candidates.
Whoopee.
And one for federal candidates. This is supposed to be state government that wants to save your money. The Secretary of State's office said an extra primary would cost $12 million to $15 million. So we haven't heard the end of this yet, and I don't know if it's legal, but until somebody says this super amendment is not constitutional or not legal, I guess it is.
I kind of think in the back of my mind, though, that as they work this through the Senate, maybe there will be something that they are able to come around with that would be a more palatable, workable kind of situation. I'm not sure. I don't know what they can come up with, but if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago how they could have gotten around an emergency clause, I wouldn't have told you that they would have come up with what they did. So.
From Eddie on Facebook, he writes, remember in 1981, Ohio voters had an opportunity to stop this practice. The fair and impartial redistricting fair was defeated at the ballot. Anybody remember that?
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think Bill and I both do.
So what happened there?
Remember got beat. Just like Reform Ohio Now got beat.
So voters don't care.
Well, you've got both political parties who kind of like the system that they have, because they know if they can control the legislature, they can control the process. If you throw this open to the to a nonpartisan board or something along that line, they don't know what they're going to get. It's the same reason that Ohio for years has been electing Supreme Court justices, because both political parties would prefer to have that, the system they know, from the system they don't know.
Right.
Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. You want to talk about Dennis Kucinich and the love he engenders among Republicans?
Yeah, I really think that Dennis will probably retain his seat, although it may move to Toledo, because the thing is that the Republicans, from what I've heard, actually seem to like Dennis because they regard him as kind of a clown that they can throw punches at. Because he's like Rick Perry, he sort of speaks before thinking and says things that, you know, cause a lot of outrage in the, you know, in the media and everything. So I think the Republicans actually like Dennis and they want to keep him in office.
They like him in a strategic way. Bill, Jack?
Well, they do. It's not, I think, that he's a great target. It's that he's not terribly relevant. Mm-hmm. Whereas Kaptur holds a seat on appropriations, the spending committees, and is a real player in the Democratic side. Kucinich tends to identify himself with causes that just are not very popular in either caucus. So he's there, and it's not like they have to worry about him being leading a serious charge that's going to gain a majority of votes in the House. The other thing I would look at is they really gave Tim Ryan a pretty safe district, and I think there was logic behind that. They don't want him running statewide. They'd like to keep him happy in his district. Bill, you might have something to add on that.
I think that's exactly right. That's what I was thinking about Tim Ryan. His name keeps coming up as a candidate for governor, just like Sherrod Brown's did in, I think, the last redistricting process. And Sherrod would show up in, Senator Brown, excuse me, would show up at the legislature and sort of twitter around, and the Republicans say, my God, he might run for governor. Let's make sure he's not, you know, gets a pretty good district. And Ryan has one. I would add one thing to the discussion about Representative Kucinich. I think it's incorrect to say he doesn't think about what he says. I think Representative Kucinich always knows what he's going to say, and it doesn't, as Jack said, it's way outside the mainstream. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that much further outside the mainstream than Representative Jordan, some of the things he says used to be. The mainstream has moved far to the right, but Dennis Kucinich always knows what he wants to say, and then he says it.
Jack Torrey, thanks for joining us today.
I was glad to join with old friends like Ann Fisher and Bill Hershey.
And Joe Ingles is also with us. Jack Torrey, Washington Bureau Chief of the Columbus Dispatch. We're going to move on when we return from the break to state issues. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, where the idea for the show Breaking Bad came from. We'll talk to Vince Gilligan. He's the show's executive producer. And we'll also hear from Aaron Paul, whose character has evolved into one tough drug dealer. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 250 years ago, an epic struggle for the fate of North America played out in New England, New York, and Canada. We call it the French and Indian War. Watch Forgotten War, a struggle for North America, Tuesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
State Auto Insurance has supported the quality programming on WOSU for over 30 years and is now proud to support the Columbus Neighborhoods Project. It's a neighborhood as active and complex as the institution it embraces, Columbus's University District, where town meets gown. Do they stand shoulder to shoulder or toe to toe? Learn more about this vibrant, exciting neighborhood when WOSU-TV presents Columbus Neighborhoods, the University District, airing Thursday, October 6th at 8 p.m.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Rain showers are likely off and on throughout the day, maybe a pop-up thunderstorm, and a high of 68. More rain for tonight and a low of 61. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're going to turn our attention to state issues. But first, an email from Rob. He writes, I asked the panel, does this matter ultimately? He's talking about redistricting. I ask this because as a political junkie who lives, eats, breathes politics, the more I speak to people as the election season ramps up, I discover that more than ever card-carrying Democrats and Republicans are so fed up with both major parties that people are becoming issue voters. Whether or not I am living in a Republican or Democratic-leaning area, I'm going to vote for who I think is best, as are my neighbors. I am curious if your panel is finding this mentality out there. Joe?
Well, I think you get sometimes with issue two, for example. I think that that's an issue that is driving people to the polls. And you are seeing some Republicans who may be teachers or firefighters, or they may be somehow impacted by issue two, and they are driven by that issue and will go to the polls and vote on that. But I think there's still partisanship, a lot of strongly partisan districts. If you look at some of these districts, Delaware County, let's take that one for example. Delaware County is always going to be strongly Republican. It's been strongly Republican for five decades, six, as long as I can remember back, it's been a Republican area. And there are a lot of areas throughout the state. Cleveland, you know, Cleveland is by and large a Democratic area and pretty much has always been that way. So you're going to have some areas where you've got partisan voters and you can always count on them being partisan. But I think that you're also right that sometimes these issues can drive it too.
Well, I've heard lots of police officers and firefighters say, I've never voted Democrat right before. And now, you know, because of State Senate Bill 5 / issue 2.
I think that we saw a lot of those police and firefighters at the State House during the demonstrations, and they may vote, I think they will vote no on issue two, but that doesn't mean they're going to vote for Barack Obama next year or right for a Democrat in these congressional districts.
Right. But if that, let's say, you know, it's Rick Perry or someone who, you know, does not like the unions, I mean, can we start to see more issues driving voters than just political party?
Maybe. I think it's going to be how the voters interpret the issues. You know, if indeed next year union loyalty is an issue in some way, then maybe we'll see that. But, you know, there are a lot of other issues that move voters. And by next year, you know, it could be a totally different issue. And we're looking at an economy that's very fragile. And who knows what's going to happen in a
year's
time.
The ultimate issue, right?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes.
It's hard to tell how, you know, what the issue will be that will drive people.
I think Joe hit the nail on the head. Just last week, Ohio unemployment went up for the third consecutive month. It's 9.1%. If unemployment is 9% a year from November, there won't be any second issue. The issues will be economy and jobs, economy and jobs, economy and jobs. It's going to be very hard for President Obama to win re-election unless there's a shift and their momentum starts changing. We've seen this in other elections. People might remember the first President Bush riding high after the Gulf War in, I think, 1991, and he was going to be a conquering hero and win a second term. The economy went in the tank, or started to, and it actually started upticking. But President Clinton was a very good campaigner, and he exploited this, and President Bush was a one-term president. On the other hand, President Clinton started to go downhill in the 95 or so. Economy wasn't doing so hot. It upticked. He took care of the Republicans in the government slowdown campaign, and he won re-election. But the economy is always the top issue in Ohio.
Let's turn back to issue two. I keep saying issue two / Senate Bill 5, depending on what how you recollect it. Last week, backers of issue two, in other words, the pro Senate Bill 5, unveiled their new strategy with the first of a series of TV ads. Let's listen to the ad from the Building a Better Ohio campaign.
Ohio is hurting. Families and communities are struggling. But with Issue 2, we can save taxpayer dollars and fix our state. Issue 2 asks government employees to help by paying 10% toward their guaranteed pension and at least 15% toward their health insurance. With many families paying far more than that, asking government employees to chip in isn't asking a lot. Issue 2's reasonable reforms will save taxpayer dollars and make Ohio stronger. Vote yes on Issue 2.
Okay, so all that scritchy scratch and stuff, someone must have been using a blackboard or a marker. It sounds like me when I doodle during a show. People always get I try to refrain. What do you make of that? That's no surprise, Joe?
I think that there, you know, when you look at polling that's been done, elements of issue of Senate Bill 5 or Issue 2, whatever you want to call it, there are certain elements of it that prove popular. Paying for your health insurance, paying a certain amount for that, paying towards your pension. Those are things that have proved popular in polling, and they're going after those issues and saying, hey, you know, these people are not pulling their weight.
So will the reaction to this then, if there is some any kind of ad reaction, be that public employees do pay for their health insurance, they do pitch in for their pensions, and to clarify things? Do you see that much of that going back, or is it just get all too complex?
Well, some of them do. You've got some public employees throughout the state who don't pay as much for their health insurance and retirement. Mm-hmm. So it depends on who you're talking about there. But I think that the message that the anti-Issue 2 people are coming out with is one that even resonates more in some ways, because people are very ticked off at politicians. They just don't like them. I mean, I think they might be even lower than used car salesmen now in the popularity ratings, because we hear this from politicians. I mean, Democrat Bob Hagan was just saying that, you know, he goes down the street and people make snide comments about him being a politician.
Well, he has been one
for a very long time. But that people feel like politicians are taking advantage of the system, that they don't represent them. And the anti-Issue 2 people have been hinting at that in their ads. And that's also a message that resonates.
I think they went beyond hinting in one of their ads. They took a decision that was made by the Republican Senate majority to give pretty sizable pay raises to both key Republican and Democratic staffers. And the pro-repeal people did what I thought was a pretty effective ad, grounded in the truth of those pay raises. It affected only a few employees, but the public employees who want to repeal Senate Bill 5, many of them took 10 furlough days for two straight years, I think, when Governor Strickland was in office, and many of them have not had raises.
Right.
614-292-8513. If you want to get on the phone and give us a call and join the conversation, my guests, Joe Engels, correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and also Bill Hershey, correspondent for the Dayton Daily News Columbus Bureau. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. There are dueling studies now about the issue of what state employees earn versus what their private counterparts are. One of them, the latest one, state and local government workers in Ohio earn, according to this report, 2.5% less in wages than their private sector counterparts, but receive fringe benefits that are more than twice as generous and better job security. That study was commissioned by the Ohio Business Roundtable. They say that they are touting it as the most careful and complete to date analysis of public and private sector compensation. The American Enterprise Institute is the two researchers are associated with the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative think tank based in Washington. So doesn't everyone say that their study is the most careful and complete to date?
You can make a study say anything you want to. Basically, if you look at what they look at when they figure that, first of all, and you look at how they figure that, you could make the opposite case on the opposite side. So, you know, it depends on who does the study.
Bill, I mean, how much can voters take of this tit for tat? Is it 2.9%, or is it that they're undercompensated by 5.9%, and it stacks up differently against their pension and other benefits?
I think voters may go into looking at these studies predisposed to think one thing or the other. those who are undecided would really have to go in depth, as Joe said, and look at what they factored into the study, because previous studies have shown that public employees don't do better than private sector
right.
employees with different factors cranked in. It doesn't mean these are bogus researchers, but the just when you make a cake, depends on what you put into it, what kind of cake it is. So.
Yeah, and when you talk about the difference between defined benefit programs, which a lot of public employees have, and 401ks, which a lot of private employees have, and when the stock market is good and everyone's riding high, the 401ks are doing really well. Not that the defined benefits suffer, but they just don't do as well as some of the 401ks do, depending on how they're invested. So, it's very subjective in the way that you look at different variables in these studies.
What's the schedule going to be for the Ohio General Assembly now? What's the plan? Have they said anything about when they're going to come back and what they'll work on?
Well, they're back. The House was back last
week.
That's
right.
Of course,
they were voting on
the redistricting plan.
Yeah.
The Senate's back this week, and they're going to vote on the redistricting plan. There was a story in the Columbus Dispatch this morning that said Senate President Niehaus wants to study all the billions of dollars in tax breaks, tax expenditures that businesses and individuals get, and see if there's some of these that we don't need anymore. That will be a long and tedious study. I don't know what kind of conclusion they'll come to. There are other kind of headline issues. Tuesday, the supporters of the heartbeat bill, which passed the Ohio House, say they're going to have a three-hour rally at the State House to try to persuade the Senate, also controlled by Republicans, to pass the heartbeat bill, which would prohibit abortions once a baby's heartbeat is detected. So there are things for them to do.
And what are the odds that the Senate's going to take up that heartbeat bill, Joe?
Well, I haven't heard anyone saying yet that they are going to take it up. And, quite frankly, politically, there would be reason not to before an election, because it's a divisive issue. And it's not exactly something that would help the Republicans in the election coming up, because you're looking at a lot of issues and people are in other frames of mind. And it's a bill that people generally have a comment on it one way or another. They either really, really like it or they really, really don't. And to open up the can of worms before the election could have some downsides.
One other thing that we should mention, it's not the legislature, but by the end of the month, the apportionment board is going to come up with 99 new Ohio House districts and 33 new Ohio Senate districts. And if you think trying to figure out the 16 congressional districts is a headache, mm-hmm. wait till this happens. And this is going to happen all of a sudden. There's not going to be lengthy debate on this. But it's also very important, because how the legislative districts are formed has an effect, as we see, with how the congressional districts end up being formed. So that's probably one of the top issues this fall.
And people will care about it in general just about as little or as much as they have?
People don't understand. I'm convinced that people don't understand redistricting. If I go outside Capitol Square and I talk to folks about redistricting, most of them don't really understand what it is and how it works, and they don't think about it a whole lot. I think WOSU listeners probably think about it a little bit more, just because of the people who listen to WOSU tend to be people who are very into the news and understand what's happening. But just in general, I think it's a very confusing issue. And a lot of times, we can't really think it's something that's going to sway an election or weigh heavy on people's minds, because if you don't understand an issue, it's unlikely it will sway you.
Well, people have only so much attention and time. And if you're worried about a job or keeping your job, or you've been out of work for 3 years, congressional redistricting, legislative reapportionment sounds like a pretty abstract topic to you. And people also, they get congressional redistricting and legislative redistricting mixed up, too. And it doesn't mean they're not good people. It's just that they have other things that they need to worry about more.
Well, I get them mixed up just in my vernacular. So you can know what they are and still mess it up. Barbara in Monroe County, you wanted to call against Senate Bill 5?
Yes. No, yes.
Okay.
no on Senate Bill 5.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your call. 614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, we have a few more minutes left. You can also email us, although I don't know if you'll get it in time. So my guests, Joe Ingles, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and also Bill Hershey, correspondent for the Dayton Daily News. What else? So this is it pretty much until after the election?
I think that there also are going to be studies started on pension overhaul, workers' compensation overhaul. These are big topics that need to be looked at. From the people I talk to, there's no guarantee that either one of them will be voted on by the end of the year, however. And so this is, you know, legislators and staff will be working on it, but we probably won't see legislation come to the floor for a vote.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Those are the kind of things that they're likely to take up at the end of the year. I don't think we're going to see them taking up a lot of highly controversial issues between now and the end of the year.
Barbara?
Yes.
You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I am a retiree from the city of Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been going through this now for 6 years or more with cuts. And I want to say that when city employees hired on, why, they were hiring on with a package that equaled what other or came up, brought the position up to the point that it was attractive as compared to commercial similar positions.
In the private sector, yeah.
And that included what the city was paying into our pension fund, even though we paid considerable into our pension fund. And it also included our health benefits. And again, we paid for the specific health benefit that we felt we needed or wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the city of Cincinnati simply did not keep their part of the bargain in paying into the pension fund over the past 6 or 8 years, and now they say they don't have the money. And as a result, they're cutting our health insurance drastically. And I think we're headed to have our pensions cut drastically as well. And they are simply using task forces from the commercial arena to compare, but these people in the commercial arena aren't comparing us to people who get bonuses or who get stock options as a part of their retirement.
Barbara, I want to give our panel a chance to respond, and thank you very much for your call because we're running out of time. Joe?
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, you look at the private sector, people do get bonuses. They do get stock options, and those are very lucrative, and you're not going to find that in the public arena. It was kind of what I was talking about earlier about 401ks. Some of those are very lucrative, depending on how they're structured. And, you know, in general, when you have defined benefits, they are not like that. And the caller is right that usually the government benefits tries to stay on par with the public benefits, but one thing, or with the private benefits. One thing we have to remember, though, over the last 30 years, the benefits Ohioans are getting are going down. We've lost manufacturing jobs, good jobs that pay good money and insurance and retirement.
Joe Ingles, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Joe Ingles, correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and also Bill Hershey with the Dayton Daily News. Bill, thanks for being here today.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from Thurber House, presenting Candace Millard, author of The Destiny of the Republic, which examines the assassination of President James Garfield. September 21st at the Columbus Performing Arts Center. Tickets at ThurberHouse.org.